Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
All my friends drive a low rider, low rider is a little higher.
Yep, that was totally unpracticed.
That song is by a band called War. And today, hello everyone, you're watching / listening to the Andro podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And War is the name of the podcast today. It's the War of the Spark set review.
We're off to a rough start.
We just recorded an hour and a half just talking about the Planeswalkers. We don't know what order it's going to come out in yet, but we're going to have two episodes total for War of the Spark. It's almost here. The cards look insane. One of the coolest sets for Magic and probably for Commander we've ever seen since the beginning of the show.
Yeah, definitely. That's why there are two episodes for the set review, because there were so many cool cards we wanted to talk about. We couldn't fit it into one. Mm-hmm. So you're going to hear about a bunch of cards. This is going to be the non-Planeswalker cards from War of the Spark. If you want to get your hands on any of those, or the Planeswalkers, or just a booster box or something else, you can go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link when you order your card, are you smelling them?
You get the new card smell.
That's true.
I guess, somewhat used card smell. But they're new enough because it's from War of the Spark, so it's still going
to
smell great.
If you want to get that new card smell for yourself, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You're going to buy Magic cards anyway. Just use the affiliate link when you do, and you really are keeping all of our content going.
And while you're there or at your local game store, purchase some Ultra Pro products. They got the Relic tokens. They have the playmats that are all themed with the Planeswalkers from War of the Spark, as well as just lots of Magic sets in the past. Amazing art on your playmat. You get to theme your deck, theme the way you play, and just feel cooler when you play at the table with their dice. All the stuff that they make.
There are a bunch of like the two color combinations, the guilds that aren't, you know, we're still on Ravnica also. Mm-hmm. So you might want, like, if you're going to build Feather, for example, which we both are, you're going to want those Boros sleeves and the Boros text box, etc. And the final way to support all of our content is directly. If you go to patreon.com/commandzone, you can contribute to us. You get to see game nights before anybody else, and you also get to chat with us on our Discord server, depending on what Patreon tier you're at. We're in there each and every day now, chatting with everybody, which I really enjoy. And we also shout out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to
Shay Ridgeway. Bum, 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 bum. Sounds like an address. Where do you live?
Shay Ridgeway.
Shay Ridgeway.
Also, Shay, your name rhymes, which is cool.
Yeah, and you rock.
Oh, geez. I forgot to say it. I'm sorry, Shay. But Jimmy, he had our backs.
Shay Ridgeway, low rider, living on Ridgeway.
You definitely rock. Okay. Let's talk really quickly. We covered this in the last episode, but just in case you didn't watch it, there is only one new mechanic in the set. It's called a mass. It says a mass and then a number. And then so let's say it's a mass two. You would put two 1/1 counters on an army you control. If you don't control one, you create a 0/0 black zombie army creature token first. So If you don't have an army, you play a card that has a mass 2, you're going to create a zombie army creature token and then put 2/1/1 counters on it. Effectively, you will have created a 2/2 zombie army creature token. But if you do already have an army creature token out and you play in a mass spell, you won't create a new token. You'll just put those counters onto the already existing token. So you never really have multiple army tokens. You only have one and it continues to grow.
A single token generator, not a mass token generator. And the returning mechanic, which is very relevant to this set and in general, Commander as a whole, is
also relevant to a mass.
Yes, and relevant to a mass, correct, is Proliferate, which says choose any number of permanent and or players, then give each another counter of each kind already there. So this is actually slightly powered up from before, because if a permanent had two different types of counters on it, you could only choose one of them to plus up. But now if it has multiple counters, you can do it two of different things. So sometimes you'll have stuff with, like, I don't know, just fate counters or what have you.
And
as
a plus
well.
One counter.
And a plus one counter, yeah. So you can give it two for, you know, I don't think it actually affects Magic too much, but.
This is big in our format, though, because experience counters are counters on players. Poison counters are counters on players.
Right.
Loyalty counters are counters. Obviously, plus one counters and things like that as well. So this is a sort of a big thing that's coming back into War of the Spark and mm-hmm. will be very useful to a lot of decks. Super Friends decks, but not only those. Okay, so those are the only two mechanics in the set, and it's because of the Planeswalkers, I think. The Planeswalkers add a lot of complexity, which we talked about in our last episode, and we won't really be discussing here. We might refer to them, but we're not going to be breaking those down. If you are interested and didn't catch the last episode, go back. I just decided that's going to be first, that episode.
Okay, great.
So the Planeswalkers are in that episode. Okay, so we're going to start...
They walk to the front.
The rest of our set review for War of the Spark with the new legendary creatures, which is how we always start.
And there's plenty of them.
There's a bunch.
Yeah. We're starting off with Tomic, Distinguished Advocate. White for a 2/3 human advisor with flying. I guess he's flying.
Lance, doesn't look like he
he's like going to get on something to help him fly.
Right, he's about to fly.
Yeah. Lands on the battlefield and land cards in graveyards can't be the targets of spells or abilities your opponents control. And your opponents can't play land cards from graveyards. So goodbye, Gitrog monster-esque decks. He's definitely a hate bear in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And I think designed for modern more than anything else.
A 2-mana 2/3 flyer.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
I wouldn't make him your commander.
Probably not, but definitely can go in the hate bear styles decks. And those land decks, there's just a ton of them these days, and they're very powerful. So it depending on your meta, it's a card you might put in the 99.
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's all lands on the battlefield, so including your lands, but it only affects opponents in terms of what it can not be targeted by. All right, the next one is it's everyone's favorite little buddy. It's Fibblethip, the Lost. He's finally turned into a legendary creature, and Jesper Ising, guest on the show before, and great commander player and artist, did the art for it. He's pretty great. He's still Lost, but one in the blue for a 1/1 homunculus. When Fibblethip, the Lost, enters the battlefield, draw a card. If it entered from your library or was cast from your library, draw two cards instead. And of course, one Fibblethip becomes the target of a spell. Shuffle Fibblethip into its owner's library. So if you were the maniac that wanted to make this into a deck, you could. As a mono blue commander, though, it's a little interesting. Notably, it can be the target of any spell, so you could target it yourself to get this back into your library.
Okay, so... there's some stuff with this. If Fibblethip is not your commander, you can sneak it into play with things like, well, not sneak it into play, but Collected.company. Boy, that's our
where
website.
You can find us right
Collected
next
Company,
cast.
The card plays it out of your library. Things like Birthing Pod, Future Sight, or Experimental Frenzy.
Yeah.
They look at the top card of your library and you can play it directly from there. Bolas's Citadel, which is a new card we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
There is a really cool sort of interaction with Proteus Staff. So, Proteus Staff is 3 mana for an artifact. You pay 2 and a blue and tap the Proteus Staff. You put target creature on the bottom of its owner's library. That creature's controller reveals cards from the top of their library until they reveal a creature card.
Mm.
That player puts that card onto the battlefield and the rest on the bottom of their library in any order. Activate this ability only as a sorcery.
Wow.
So if Fibblethip is your commander and you have Proteus Staff in the deck and it's your only creature in your deck... you can activate Proteus Staff, put it on the bottom. It'll immediately search it up, put it into play.
You will draw 2 cards because it came from the library, and
you get to order your entire library. So you will draw. You will tutor for any 2 cards.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool interaction.
Yeah, I mean, you have to get Proteus Staff, but blue is one of the best colors at finding specific artifacts. There's War of Invention. There's Reshape. There's Fabricate. There's transmute type stuff.
You could find a, probably be able to form an infinite combo pretty easily here, right, with the Proteus Staff. And if you're able to untap the Proteus Staff and use it again, then you're just drawing a lot of cards thanks to Fibblethip.
Yeah, I mean, just double tutoring for three mana is seems very strong. And,
yeah,
and you can, and being able to do it again and again. So that's kind of an interaction that's interesting. I don't know how often we'll see it, or if it's...
I mean, if you build a deck that literally relies on these two cards, I think, to really make it to hum, especially in mono blue, which isn't as great at fetching things out from your library.
But I think if Fibblethip's in your command zone, then finding Proteus Staff's pretty easy for blue, because it has a million ways to find
that for sure.
Artifacts. So if
you just have to be in mono blue.
And you have to say, I'm going to let Fibblethip get shuffled or put on the bottom of my library, you know.
I could see this being in a green-blue deck, and you're going to find Fibblethip with the green.
Vanifar.
And, yeah, and then green has so...
Yisong.
Like, and then you can just find a Tooth and Nail,
Birthing
or whatever.
Pod, yeah. Like, million ways. Eldritch Evolution to get it out of your library directly to play, right? Yeah. Interesting card. The next one is... Oh boy, how do you pronounce this? Ilharg. The Raze Boar. It's 3 red for a legendary boar god. It's a 6/6 with trample.
Very Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever Ilharg attacks, you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. Return that creature to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. When Ilharg dies or is put into exile from the battlefield, you may put it into its owner's library, third from the top. That last part's probably unlikely to happen. I guess you could. This is interesting and could potentially be very powerful, because sneaking a creature directly into the battlefield, tapped and attacking, is something like, what's the angel demon dragon one?
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I don't know.
Kalia does that, but they don't...
for specific cards. And the thing is about Raze Boar, he returns it to your hand. So sneak attack, they'll get rid of him at the end of the turn and all that. So this is actually interesting. I have interest in Ilharg.
Now, you don't get the attack triggers on things, because it does come into play already attacking. So
and that's actually a Kalia thing that is also very specific to her card.
But Kalia can only get 3 card types. This can get Eldrazi. You won't get Annihilator.
Right.
Because that's an on-attack thing. But you could get, you know, some other things. Also, I think, like, Runescarred Demon just every turn.
Mm-hmm.
That seems pretty good.
Anything with a strong enters the battlefield effect.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing green, you have all sorts of creatures that do cool stuff. Even just getting an Eat Witness back in this way is kind of cool too, right?
Sepulchral Primordial, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. One of the Primordials. Also, you can run Sundial of the Infinite.
Right.
And keep those creatures in play forever, right? You end the turn, you can only do it during your turn. And
if you're playing blue with this, you could put Wonder in the graveyard and make sure that the creatures attacking don't die
or anything. I mean, it's a 6/6. You're always going to be able to attack somebody.
With him,
right?
But the creature you're attacking might be
if it's
too
a small thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good point if you just want to get value. I think this is a very powerful effect. It's cheating of mana costs, like we always say. Mm-hmm. And if you're comparing it to Sneak Attack, well, Sneak Attack is crazy good.
Yeah, that's true. So being able to abuse it, obviously more effective. Next up, a new Krenko. Pretty excited about the Tin Street Kingpin. Just everyone is coming to Ravnica, I guess.
Every character you've heard of is like, well, I better be there.
Yeah.
They're like, anybody who hit anybody is going to be there. You can't miss it.
Well, his flavor text, after the people flee, but before the enemy arrives... That's grabbing time. So he's a napper.
Oh,
he's stealing all the stuff.
He's looting, yeah.
Yeah, he's smart. 2 red for a 1/2 goblin. Whenever Krenko attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Then create a number of 1/1 red goblin creature tokens equal to Krenko's power. So this is a card that you can buff up, obviously, and make him really huge so that when he attacks and his power is really big, you get to make a lot of goblins.
And he's always going to grow as he goes. So it's going to be two, even if you do nothing, it's going to be 2 goblins, then 3 goblins, then 4 goblins on successive turns. Shared Animosity was a card that came to mind. This is whenever a creature you control attacks, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn for each other attacking creature that shares a creature type with it. So it won't work on the first attack, but after that, you attack with the goblins that were made, you stack it so that Shared Animosity pumps his power first, and then he makes a bunch more. Also, this seems pretty good in the Feather deck, because that's going to have pump spells.
Right.
So you just pre-combat play your Giant Growth, your Brute Strength type thing.
Brute Strength, yeah.
Yeah, and you play that and give it like 5 power, then attack, and the pump spell comes back to your hand, so you're going to be able to do that every turn.
It was either Brute Force or Brute Strength. I know that it was from Time Spiral, basically. What?
There's both, I think, because...
Yeah, Planar Chaos is Brute Force, which is exactly Giant Growth, which is red for +3/+3.
Yeah, so you can do those type of cards in Feather, and you're not wasting the card, and you're getting a bunch of extra goblins that you can use with Feather.
And then if you have
Zada... Path of Exile trick I was talking about.
Yeah, Path of Exile trick, Zada, all those cards work very well in that case.
Yep.
The next card is Massacre Girl. 3 a black and a black for a 4/4 legendary creature human assassin with menace. When Massacre Girl enters the battlefield, each other creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. Whenever a creature dies this turn, each creature other than Massacre Girl gets -1/-1 until end of turn.
Really interesting card. You kind of, you want to like go up the chain, right? You want her to come in, kill at least one creature, and then...
it's going to trigger her ability, her second part of her ability.
So she'll kind of give everything -2/-2. And if there was... so like if there's a 1-drop, a 2-drop, and a 3-drop out, you're going to go up to...
yeah, 1 toughness, 2 toughness, 3 toughness.
Yeah, sorry, not 1-drop. Yeah, you're right. That's going to get you all the way to -4/-4 maybe.
Yeah.
Because it'll, you know, kill the 1, trigger again, kill the 2-2, trigger again, kill the 3-3, trigger again. If there's a 4-4, I mean, that's Magical Christmas Land, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is that you don't... you know, the creatures that die, if you make them after the fact, they'll get -2/-2, so you don't even need to make a 2-2 to get killed by it. Like, another 1-1 will be out because of the cards that we have here.
Yeah, right. So our good buddy DJ at Jumbo Commander just did recently a sort of mini deck tech on Massacre Girl, and he had some cool ideas. So something like Forbidden Orchard, which is a land, and when you tap it for mana, you give an opponent a 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really useful with Massacre Girl because... not only can you put the 1-1 out and then cast her and just make sure you're going to give everything -2/-2 basically,
mm-hmm.
but you can also, if there's already a 1-1 on the board, play Massacre Girl. That kills the 1-1. That triggers her to give everything else -1/-1 again. In response to that, tap your Forbidden right. Archer, make another 1-1. That's going to give everything -3/-3 basically.
Yeah, I could see these just climbing up the chain really quickly. I mean... 3-3, 4-4, 5-5 seem very common stats in EDH.
And it's everything except Massacre Girl, so you don't have to worry about killing herself, right? So she's always going to stick around. Acorn Catapult, our editor for the podcast sometimes, Murphy loves that card. Yeah. I've seen him play it a few times. That's another thing kind of like Forbidden Orchard, which would work. Pestilence, a really good card with Massacre Girl, right?
Yeah, you're just able to trigger it a couple of times, and all of a sudden every creature is dying. And the important part is she stays on the battlefield, so Pestilence doesn't really go away either.
Right, exactly. I mean, you couldn't Pestilence for more than 4 because Pestilence will hit her. But at the same time, her second ability is whenever a creature dies this turn, the turn she came into play.
Right.
So you can like play her. Nothing dies, but then Pestilence for 1, that kills some 2-2s. Then she triggers again, that kills some 3-3s.
Yeah.
Now she triggers again, kills some 4-4s.
You can get her Pestilence up to -3/-3, and she still stays alive.
So that kind of allows you to really...
to stack it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, to go up the chain. So I think she's interesting, and she's a legendary creature, so a board wipe in your command zone can be very powerful.
Play some Eldrazi Spawn with her.
All right.
Sack him for mana.
What's the next card?
Oh, I have to read this next one.
Yeah.
It's me. Again. 2 red for Neheb, Dreadhorde Champion. The number of people that ask me, hey, Jimmy, what do you think about the new Heb is like more than any other card.
I like how that card is like associated with you, but it's only because you got mana screwed with it.
Yeah, well, I did have my burn deck with it.
That's true.
But there, yeah.
Yeah, it's because you played Neheb 3 different times.
Yeah.
Different versions of him.
2 of the same time. Yeah. Okay. This guy's a 5/4 zombie minotaur warrior with trample, and whenever Neheb deals combat damage to a player or a planeswalker, you may discard any number of cards. If you do draw that many cards and add that much red mana until end of turn, you don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. That card is sweet.
This card seems really good. Just creating free mana is so powerful, and you're ending up with the same amount of cards you had.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like the cards where it's you cast it and then you draw for the number of cards in your hand, and you can discard 1 card, 2 cards, your whole hand, up to you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're like, oh, there's 1 card I know I want to cast, I'm going to discard all the other ones and then draw them, and then I'm going to do that again next turn and just make 5-6 extra mana every turn.
And he has trample. He only has to deal combat damage, not a certain amount. So as far as conditions to be met are concerned, it's actually not the most difficult.
And, you know, you could be in blue or something else where you have 20 cards in hand.
Yeah.
In which case, if this is creating 20 mana, you probably win that turn.
True.
Yeah.
Give the guy a little haste.
Yeah, seems pretty good. All right, the next one is... Mowu, Loyal Companion.
So I guess Jiang Yanggu's dog can grow into like a 9-tailed fox.
Yeah, it has, well, only 3 tails here, but yeah, it does look like Kiwi if she was on steroids for about 4 years.
Buff Kiwi.
Kiwi hit the gym along with Obnoxilus.
Yeah.
They've been secretly going to the gym together.
Yeah, they're just gym buddies. They help each other lift.
Yeah, there's, you know, Kiwi needed a spotter.
Yeah.
All right, Mowu is 3 and a green for a 3/3 legendary creature hound. Has trample and vigilance. If one or more +1/+1 counters would be put on Mowu, that many +1/+1 counters are put there instead. So Mowu has a hardened scales attached to him or her.
So he's just a buff boy.
Just going to get bigger faster.
Yeah, he'll go into a 5/5 the first time he has a 1/+1/+1 counter.
Yep.
Yeah, Trample Vigilance. You know,
it's fine. I don't think you're building a deck around it, no. But maybe if you have,
if you want a Jiang Yanggu like flavor win.
Yeah, that's true, because it taps for mana. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Feather the Redeemed is the next card, and we talked about this at length in our preview episode. This is the preview card for the show. Make sure you check that episode out. We spend like 25 minutes straight just gushing about this card. No, it is sweet. Joke. It's a red, white, white for a 3/4 legendary creature angel with flying. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell that targets a creature you control, exile that card instead of putting it into your graveyard as it resolves. If you do, return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. So, very good.
Yeah, if you want to hear us break down everything about that, you can find our preview card episode. We go through a whole bunch of cards that'll work good. Or good, work good with it.
It will work good.
We'll be...
Dragon.
I did want to say there's two things we didn't mention on the episode, and one was because we didn't know exactly how this worked, because you got to remember, when we're doing the preview card episode, nobody else in the world knows about the card yet, so it's hard to...
rules interactions.
So you just stay away from things you're not sure about if you can, not that we don't still get things wrong, but flashback, interestingly enough, does work with Feather, so when you flash the card back, you actually get the card back into your hand after that's all said and done. So Past in Flames and a bunch of other things are in play for that deck that we weren't sure about before. And Heroic is another... mechanic we didn't mention. It was in Theros block and it's been reprinted a little since, where the creatures care about being targeted by a spell. So like Annex and Simonine, or I don't know how Simonide. You say it, Simonide, or however you say it, are those type of creatures may have a home in the deck. I think you want mostly instants and sorceries, but you know, you might want one or two, even like a Crone Crusader, which just makes a 1/1 when you target it, might be possible. Anyway, so Feather has gotten a ton of press. People are really excited about that card.
It's the best Boros commander of all time, straight up.
It might be the most exciting commander in the whole set, so thanks, Wizards, for giving us that one. All right, the next one is pretty sweet, though. It's in the running for most exciting commander in the set.
Because it's got five colors.
It's Niv-Mizzet Reborn.
I'm back!
Niv-Mizzet is no longer just Izzet. It's now Wooburg.
Yeah, Niv-Wooburg is it.
Yep, costs 5 mana, white, blue, black, red, and green for a 6/6 flying dragon avatar legendary creature. Of course, it says, when Niv-Mizzet Reborn enters the battlefield, reveal the top 10 cards of your library. For each color pair, choose a card that's exactly those colors from among them. Put the chosen cards into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
The text is very confusing, but basically we know the guilds in Ravnica, and those are the 10 color pairs. So if you played Niv-Mizzet and you flipped 3 Boros cards and 1 Izzet card, you could choose 1 Boros card from them and 1 Izzet card from them.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't get 2 of the same color pair, and 3 color pairs don't count at all.
Right.
The cards have to be exactly 2 color, and you can get only 1 of each individual color pairing. So if you flip 10 cards and you only get 4 Boros cards and the rest are lands, you can only get 1 of those cards. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you flip 10 cards and you get a Boros, a Dimir, a Golgari, and a Selesnya, and some repeats, and you're like, well, I just got 4 cards off this thing. Yeah. I think if you get 2 cards, it's really good.
Yeah, not bad. 5 mana, 6/6 flying, draw 2.
Moldrifter is 5 mana, 2/2 flying, draw 2.
Much harder to cast than Mizzet, obviously, but you also have to build your deck in a way that you have a lot of guild cards in there.
I think it's almost all guild cards and like ramp, basically, probably, yeah.
But there are plenty of powerful cards. You just have to figure out what direction you're going with the deck. So I think actually Niv-Mizzet poses a really interesting and unique deck building challenge, and how do you include the right ratio of cards that are in the guilds and also still support your main game plan?
I heard some rumblings from the CEDH crowd, the competitive crowd, how Niv-Mizzet is possibly going to replace General Tazri or be built like General Tazri, who's a 5-color deck.
Right.
So the way the Tazri decks work, or some of these 5-color decks work, actually, you know what? The way that all competitive EDH decks just about tend to work is at some point their first goal is create infinite mana.
Mm-hmm.
The way the Tazri deck does it, and the way the Niv-Mizzet will probably do it, is food chain with like Mist Hollow Griffin, so that you sacrifice it, it goes into exile. Mist Hollow Griffin can be played from exile, but you're always up 1 mana on that exchange, which you can only use to cast creatures, but still, you just do that infinite amount of times, create infinite amount of mana. Now you can cast Niv-Mizzet infinite times, sacking
your whole deck, yeah.
Yeah, sacking it to food chain. And what you find is you find a card called Spark Caster, which is a gruel card, so Niv-Mizzet can find it.
Right.
And then Spark Caster, you can basically cast, I think, and bounce itself over and over, and that will just do 1 damage at a time, infinite times. And I think people are saying that that's a little bit easier than the way Tazri does it now. So that was Braden on our Discord. I'm going to give him credit for that, because he was talking about that combo, and seems pretty cool.
Not my flavor. Rolesque Apex Hybrid, though, a little closer to my flavor. 2 green, green, blue for a 4/5 flying trample human mutant. When Rolesk enters the battlefield, put 2+1/+1 counters on another target creature you control. And when Rolesk dies, proliferate, then proliferate again. So notably, this must die. This can't go back to the command zone. It needs to hit your graveyard to double proliferate. But it's going to give you a target for it at the very least when it enters the battlefield. You get to put 2+1/+1 counters on another creature you control. And outside of that, it's a 5-mana 4/5 flying trample. So actually, pretty great stats for a creature. Having to die, though, doesn't make it the greatest commander necessarily. Unless you just need to use it once, and you know, for, and maybe you have some ways of regrowing it.
I wish they'll stop doing that on legendary creatures. Just like, you know, Alinda was right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like that or it has to get exiled. Like, that's, I think, kind of the thing it's avoiding. There's no in-between right now between dying and exiling.
Yeah, to, I wish they could fix the rule, like, but I guess Chal of Valara becomes oppressively good if you do that. So.
And then, if it leaves the battlefield, then you can't, that doesn't work either. Yeah.
Yeah. It's too bad because, yeah, you have to let it hit the graveyard, and then I guess you're in green, you could maybe get it back. Just seems not worth it at that point.
Yeah. If you have Sac Outlets, though, definitely good in a green-blue deck that wants to proliferate.
Yeah, good with Planeswalkers, too, potentially.
And Vanifar and anything like that.
All right, Store of Devcare and Lich. That's the next card. 1 BB/GB, 4 mana total for a 5/4 legendary creature, Zombie Elf Wizard, has Trample. Whenever Store of deals combat damage to a player or Planeswalker, return to your hand target creature or Planeswalker card in your graveyard that wasn't put there this combat. So the thing that you return can't have died during the combat where the damage was dealt in by Storov, but you can get a Planeswalker, too. It goes to hand.
Yeah.
You got to deal combat damage. I mean, Storov has Trample.
He's probably going to be able to get in. Again, it's, like, it's very similar to the Neheb and being a 5-4 Trampler, in that you can definitely hit people for damage and most likely have this trigger. I mean, if you have Planeswalkers that you know are going to be minusing to die.
That's true. Especially like the uncommon ones that can only minus, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Otherwise, it seems interesting. You only get to choose one target creature or Planeswalker. It doesn't bounce all of them back. It requires you to hit them for stuff. And this doesn't seem just even close to as powerful as what the Heb's doing.
Or what Marin's doing or Caridor, right? Yeah. Like those type of cards. They're letting you play things out of your graveyard.
You got to untap.
You don't have to combat damage.
You have to combat with this guy. Yeah, it
seems not great.
And there's not that much haste enabled.
I don't honestly think that even goes in those other decks. It's just too much work,
If you might be able to build a deck around it, but even then, I don't think the power level is too high. But if you want a Zombie Elf Wizard Trouble deck, maybe that's the one.
That's true. It has three creature types.
Tolstomir, Friend to Wolves, is our last legendary creature. It's 2 GG and a white for a 3/3 Elf Scout. When Tolstomir enters the battlefield, create Voha, Friend to Elves, a legendary 3/3 green and white wolf creature token. Whenever a wolf enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 3 life, and that creature fights up to 1 target creature you control. So, Wolf Tribal, bite your heart out.
It should have red if it's Wolf Tribal, right? Like, it's weird that it has green.
Yeah. I mean, we saw, the Wolf Planeswalker as well in Arlen. Was it Arlen?
And Arlen is green only. But red has the second most wolves, I would think, and werewolves specifically.
Well, Tolstomir is a friend to the wolves, so maybe that's what gives him his white.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed. Like, if he had red, then you could play the werewolves, and maybe this would make sense, because all your werewolves would fight stuff, because they always come in on their wolf side.
Right. Do werewolves count as wolves?
Yeah, because... on their wolves. Well, some of them are, and some aren't. Some are humans. Okay. Some are wolves, some are, werewolves. I don't know. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe
I don't know. Wolf Tribal is never something that's been like, whoa, let's build a Wolf Tribal deck.
I know.
It just doesn't have that much support, and unfortunately, I don't think this set is going to necessarily give it the tools.
If that's
it
what
needs.
We're getting, I don't think it's probably enough.
Yeah. It's okay, though, soon, I'm sure.
I hope.
We'll get one.
Okay, so there's a bunch of cycles in this set. The first is there's a cycle of colored artifacts. So artifacts that have a color, they're all rare.
And color in their mana cost as well.
Yeah, so the first one is Parhelion 2, which is a legendary vehicle. It costs 6 WW, so 8 mana.
We can just move on to the next card, right?
it is powerful, though. It's a 5/5 flying first strike vigilance with crew 4. But whenever Parhelion 2 attacks, create 2 4/4 white angel creature tokens with flying and vigilance that are attacking. So you create 2 Sarah Angels when it attacks, not when it deals combat damage. Mm-hmm. So if you can get this thing out and swing with it one time, maybe with haste or something.
I mean, that is 13 damage right there.
It's
and it's flying first strike vigilance, and the tokens are also vigilant and they stay around. So you're putting, 13 power and toughness on the board, and you are potentially smacking someone for a bunch too.
Yeah, it's powerful if you get it going. I mean, it's 8 mana.
Yeah.
Expropriate costs 9 mana, so that's the scale we're judging things on.
You could also just play like Zatalpa. You know, you have the giant
good
double strike and crazy dinosaurs.
But he doesn't make two angels every time. Like,
yeah,
that's
but you
crazy.
you also have to crew for it. So, I mean, look, it's an 8 mana. It's going to be tough to get out. Don't play the mono white because you're going to have a real rough time ramping this sucker out.
That's a really good point, actually.
I could see this is like a fun times win condition in a token deck that has green so you can get a lot of mana ramp. And you can crew it with a bunch of random tokens, and then you're making angels.
It's too bad it doesn't have Devoid or something that like makes it colorless so that you could like combine it with the new Ugin.
Right.
And it's white, so you can't like affinity for artifacts with Tezzeret.
Yeah. You're just playing a big, chunky creature.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have affinity because it's not a creature or a planeswalker, right?
Right.
For Tezzeret.
Oh, yeah, that's
because
true.
It's a legendary artifact vehicle. It can become a creature.
You're right. Okay, well then. Okay.
Next up is another vehicle, but this one's the Silent Submersible. It's much more discreet than the last guy. It's blue-blue for a 2/3 artifact vehicle. Whenever Silent Submersible deals combat damage to a player or a planeswalker, draw a card. And it's got crew of two. So this actually reminds me of the Looter Scooter a little bit.
Not as good because it doesn't have an evasion,
doesn't have
right?
Flying, yeah. But still 2 mana for 2/3 with crew two, and you get to draw cards with it. It's cool if you like vehicles.
I would say that probably you're going to get a couple swings in if you get it out on turn two, but it's going to be bad late game.
Yeah. Let's talk about the real card in the set.
Okay, so this card is nuts. It's going to be the front runner for best or most powerful card in the set.
Yep.
It's Bolas's Citadel. 3BB, 6 mana total for a legendary artifact. It says, you may look at the top card of your library anytime. You may play the top card of your library.
Okay.
So it's like Future Sight. If you cast a spell this way, pay life equal to its converted mana cost rather than pay its mana cost.
I'm sorry, what? Wait, well, what?
Yeah, so you don't. So you can play cards off the top of your library like Experimental Frenzy or Future Sight. Many cards have done this. Except you don't pay it with mana. You pay it with life equal to the CMC.
Mm-hmm. This is definitely just a straight win condition. You just gain a lot of life in a deck that has black in it. You play a card like Alora or any like Orzhov deck that's all about life gain. If you have 80 life, you're playing like 6-7 cards off the top of your library as long as you don't hit a land.
Yeah, you can hit a land. I don't even think you need the life gain to be very, very powerful. There are decks with Ad Nauseam that'll just go like 40 cards deep because they just have all low casting cost stuff and they're just looking for pieces. Anything that, let's just say at a base level, this said add 40 mana to your mana pool and draw 7 cards.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. Like, it's Channel crossed with Yawgmoth's Bargain.
Yeah.
Those are two banned cards. Obviously, there are some pitfalls where you can hit a land and you have to stop, but, you know, you can
top
get around that.
Scroll rack
top and scroll
rack. Real
yeah,
nice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's we're not even done. It does have an activated ability because they were like, you know what? This card's not powerful enough. What else can we have it do? You can also tap Bolas' Citadel, sacrifice 10 non-land permanents, and each opponent loses 10 life. Which is probably going to be rarely used on the card, but once in a while, treasures or tokens
Or if just get them, right? It's like, sure, I have a bunch of things out there, and I can kill the problematic player with this.
Yeah.
Or neuter them enough because of their life total. So yeah, Bolas' Citadel.
Or Wound Reflection is out or something, and you just 20 everybody kind of thing, yeah.
This card is nuts. I think anyone that can play this probably wants to in a black deck if you can afford the mana cost. It just lets you cast cards for free.
I think there's a good chance this
is... not free, but very close to it to me.
This is the Paradox Engine good card in the set.
Uh-huh.
And like, I don't even say that tongue-in-cheek. I think there's a good chance this is like on the too powerful side.
It can just end the game on the spot.
It's going to be a groaner type card after a little while where people are like, they
see
it.
Well, 6 mana end the game, right? Like, usually we're waiting for 9 mana and up for those kinds of spells in EDH. And this is 6 mana with maybe one other card, like a Scroll Rack, to really get it going.
Yeah, and it's obviously there's some setup to get to really go off, but there could be times too where you just play it and you're able to just play 12 mana worth of stuff on turn 6.
We've seen how powerful Experimental Frenzy is. And
let's just say Expropriate's a card on top of your deck. Like, you can just win right there. Or
9 life, Expropriate.
There's a million cards that like are just enough, a lot of mana, but taking 10 damage to cast something is not that much in EDH. You know, because you're liable to be at 37, 35 life.
Yeah, especially if that card is a 10 mana card on turn 4 or 5, because you could ramp out Bolas' Citadel pretty easily as well. All right, Mizzium Tank, 1RR for an artifact vehicle. That's a 3/2 with trample. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, Mizzium Tank becomes an artifact creature and gets +1/+1 until end of turn, or you can crew it for 1. I think this is going to see a lot of play in standard because it's a 3 mana 3/2 trampler with a crew cost of 1, which is just going to be a good rate. And anytime you cast a non-creature spell, it gets +1/+1.
Yeah.
If you cast multiple non-creature spells, it keeps getting that +1/+1.
Would you consider playing a card like this because there are going to be so many
planeswalkers running around, or is it still two?
It's for three mana, right?
Yeah.
It's just not powerful enough, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think it's going
to save. And it has, you know, it requires you to either be in a deck with a lot of non-creature spells, or, I don't know, not have any better options at three.
Yeah, it seems like you can probably do better.
Play Goblin Rabblemaster.
That's true.
I'll probably hit a planeswalker more often than not.
All right, and the green artifact is Vivian's Arcbow. It is one in a green for a legendary artifact. You pay X and tap it. Discard a card. Look at the top X cards of your library. You may put a creature card with converted mana cost X or less from among them onto the battlefield. Then you put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So you kind of... Genesis Wave. No, it's just for one card.
I think you'd want to set this up, but I would say... You're also discarding a card, but I'd say like for about five, you're probably going to get some good stuff.
Usually. That's true. You're discarding a card, so yeah.
Yeah, it's not great, but it's a way to cheat mana cost. No, it's not cheating mana cost. It's a way to...
It's card advantage.
Card advantage.
Right.
Eh.
You have to hit with it, but...
Well, you're also discarding a card. It does stuff. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the gods in the set. That's right. Nicol Bolas came back from Amonkhet, and, well, he unfortunately killed all of the gods except for the red one. And by kill, I mean he decided to make them...
He took them over. Hazoret actually did really die, right?
Yeah, I think so. And he, you know, he had previously come to Amonkhet to take them over in the first place, but now they are fully under his control. And these are all some pretty powerful cards, so I'm excited to read these guys out. First up is God Eternal Oketra. 3WW for a 3/6 with double strike. These are all zombie gods, by the way. Whenever you cast a creature spell, create a 4/4 black zombie warrior creature token with vigilance. Whenever you cast a creature spell.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the, I think they all have this text at the bottom. Whenever God Eternal Oketra dies or is put into exile from the battlefield, you may put it into its owner's library, third from the top.
So it's difficult to get rid of. From a card advantage standpoint, you still get rid of it as normal. Yeah. They just draw it again in a couple of turns, which I don't think is the biggest of big deals.
But whenever you cast a creature spell, create a 4/4 black zombie warrior creature token with vigilance. That's pretty good. 4/4, that's powerful.
I'll play Oketra's Monument in some decks just for that effect. Yeah, and it just makes 1/1s. Of course, Oketra costs more, but still, making a 4/4 can be super powerful.
A 3/6 to double strike is a very good blocker as well.
Yeah. Okay. So the next God Eternal is the blue one. It's Kefnet. 2 and 2 blue. For a 4/5 flyer, you may reveal the first card you draw each turn as you draw it. Whenever you reveal an instant or sorcery card this way, copy that card and you may cast the copy. That copy costs 2 less to cast.
Expropriate for 7.
When God Eternal Kefnet dies or is put into exile from the battlefield, you may put it into its owner's library, third from the top.
This one seems good.
Yeah, because the...
Makes it cost 2 less, and you still draw the card?
Yeah, you cast a copy, so you still have the original card
like
in your hands.
Two cards.
And also, if you decide not to cast it, nothing bad happens. You're just like, oh, I'm not casting that right now.
Yeah.
So there's some infinite turn shenanigans, too, that are kind of obvious with, again, Scroll Rack, Jace the Mind Sculptor, anything that repeatedly allows you to take something from your hand, put it on your library, because... Kefnet's copying the spell, but the card's still going to your hand.
Right, you're drawing it, so you can just put it back somehow.
Yeah, so any extra turn spell and Scroll Rack just goes infinite because you copy it with Kefnet, goes to your hand, then you're going to get an extra turn after this one. You put it back on the top of your deck with Scroll Rack, and now you're going to do the same thing next turn and next turn and next turn. So
things are going to get degenerate with Kefnet around, I can tell already.
Yeah, for sure. It's pretty good, and it's a 4-mana, 4/5 flyer.
Yeah, I actually like God Eternal Kefnet probably the most out of all of these, just because it's, you know, again, you're copying spells off the top of your library. That seems very powerful.
I think in this environment, too, a 4/5 flyer is going to be useful against Planeswalkers. It'll deter them from maybe playing it because you can get at them.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it has a really relevant, powerful ability on top of it does make it, like, pretty playable in a lot of decks. You obviously need a lot of instants and sorceries. You probably need somewhere in the realm of like 20 to 25.
This is a 100% pass the turn and draw cards on other people's turns because...
Oh, yeah. It's the first card you draw each turn.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You could, you know, even if you use a top, that counts as drawing a card for the turn. So.
Well, and if you have top, you can set an instant or sorcery there and make sure you get the perfect one.
Yeah. And so. It costs 2 less to cast, and it doesn't even cost you anything to cast. The card itself still stays in your hand. So that's actually, I think, very powerful.
Yeah.
God Eternal Bontu, 3 black for a 5/6 zombie god with menace. When God Eternal Bontu enters the battlefield, sacrifice any number of other permanents, then draw that many cards. And of course, the same text that when he dies or is put into exile, you can put it into its owner's library, third from the top. Yeah, This is similar to a lot of effects in black. There was a plane. No, there was that the one that made all the little creatures that was black and green. That was Gruul that you could sacrifice a permanent to draw a card. That's definitely a black thing.
Trading Golgari, you mean? Yeah,
Golgari. Sorry, yeah. So it's trading cards in for
trading permanents in for cards.
Yeah,
yeah. If you have a bunch of like expendable stuff,
tokens,
treasures,
even lands, you
clues.
Know.
Yeah,
yeah. So I think this is
stuff that wants to
powerful.
Die. Yeah, that comes back maybe.
It is cool that you get to draw a lot with this when it comes in. So if you can set it up and have it land on the battlefield and draw you a bunch of cards, seems pretty effective.
Yeah, I think it's fine. It's only certain decks would want it.
Yeah, as are pretty much is the case for like every card we talk about usually.
Yeah, true. The next one is God Eternal Ronus. 3GG, 5/5 Death Touch, Zombie God. When Ronus enters the battlefield, double the power of each other creature you control until end of turn, and those creatures gain vigilance until end of turn. Well, so whatever their power is, they're twice as much power, but no trample.
Yeah, this is kind of like a, you know, could be more powerful than a Crater Hoof in terms of the power gained, depending
possible.
On how many creatures you
yeah.
have on the battlefield.
But the fewer creatures you have, the better it is than Crater Hoof, basically.
Right. At least they gain vigilance. If you have a way to give your creatures trample, which of there are plenty of ways of doing it, God Eternal Ronus could just be in a mono green stompy deck, play it one game.
Yeah. It seems like I want trample pretty bad in that scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Or I want the pump effect to be larger. Or I don't know. It seems okay.
Definitely one of those like single player KO decks because of the vigilance. You know, it helps you block on the next attack back.
Like the three big ones are Crater Hoof, Triumph of the Hordes, and Beastmaster Ascension.
Mm-hmm.
You're not replacing any of those with this, right?
And the Enraze Foe Runners or whatever. Enraiser, but you're not replacing any of them with it. I could see this being as a fun build around or just an additional effect of that type.
Yeah.
If you just
I just think most decks don't want four or five of that effect, right? Yeah. They want creatures, and they only need to pump them one time.
Yeah, this is a creature, however.
Yeah.
But if you want to be McBeady Face in EDH... play some more God Eternal Ronus.
Beady McBeady Face. All right. So there's a cycle of cards called the Finale Cycle. Yeah, and they're all X spells. There's one in each color, and they care if X is 10 or more.
Yep. And they all do two things. One normal, and then if X is 10 or more, it does something extra. So Finale of Glory is the white version for X white white. It's a sorcery. Create X 2/2 white soldier creature tokens with vigilance. If X is 10 or more, so if you pay 12 mana total or more, also create X 4/4 white angel creature tokens with flying and vigilance. Now that's actually pretty good. Just by itself, you're kind of doing White Sun Zenith, right?
Yep.
Instead of cats, you're making white soldier creature tokens and they do have vigilance. You don't shuffle it back in, but the 10 plus marker, if you're casting any of these spells for 12 mana, you should have, you know, you should be very well on the way to winning the game, I think.
But I would say X spells, like normally we say, like, oh, for 10 mana, you should get a sort of I win the game card.
Yeah.
But X spell is different because an Expropriate, for example, the example we always use, you can't cast it for 3 mana, right? Mm-hmm. You can only cast it for 9. A spell like this, I can cast it for 5 mana if that's what I have to do and get 3/2/2 soldiers. So the flexibility means that sometimes when I just happen to be in a game where I do have 12 mana and I create 10 mm-hmm. 2/2s and 10 4/4 flyers, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and the more you put into it, the better the rate is.
Wish it was an instant.
Yeah. And that's another White Sun Zenith thing. At 5 mana, you're getting 6 power for 5 mana. At 7 mana, you're getting 8 power for 7.
10.
10, yeah. So, like, the number gets better and better when you start increasing it. But, yeah, it's okay. Good for token making, I suppose.
All right, the next one is the blue one, Finale of Revelation. It is blue, and X for sorcery. Draw X cards. If X is 10 or more, instead, shuffle your graveyard into your library, then draw X cards, untap up to 5 lands, and you have no maximum hand size for the rest of the game. Exile, Finale of Revelation. Okay, so at normal, it's a Brain Geyser, which is playable, and a lot of people do play that card. Mm-hmm. At 10, it actually rebates 5 of the lands, untap 5 lands, and you just get no maximum hand size for the rest of the game. You kind of get like an emblem that does that. And you do the time twister effect.
Right.
You shuffle the graveyard into the library.
Yeah.
It seems pretty good.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like how you do get your graveyard into your library. It's a good way for decks that are trying to mill yourself out or just have maximum hand size, recycle a lot of the more useful cards.
Untapping 5 lands is big. It allows you to maybe protect...
Yeah.
You know, because normally, like, I pay 12 mana, I'm tapped out, I drew a million cards, it's not the greatest, because at that point in the game, you're like, well, now my shields are totally down.
Yeah.
But 5 lands untapped could be,
7-8 mana too with Temple of the False Gods, Bounce Lands, Gaia's Cradles, and things like that. And mm-hmm. you could easily like recover most of the mana you put into it. So it could be close to free. It's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This next one I previewed on my stream. It's the Finale of Eternity. X black black sorcery. Destroy up to 3 target creatures with toughness X or less. If X is 10 or more, return all creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. So you get a bunch of things, right? You can destroy a bunch of creatures, including your own, if 10 is X or more, and then you can basically bring all the creature cards
maybe
back out.
Maybe get an ETB or something.
Yeah, this is interesting, though. X, black, black, destroy up to 3 target creatures with toughness X or less. So X is the only number that cares about the toughness of the creatures you're trying to target, because you can destroy up to 3, which seems actually really good. I can see this seeing a lot of play in different areas just because it's not X for destroying X number of creatures.
Getting 3 creatures with 1 card is pretty big game, and there might be times where you're like 5 mana destroy 3 creatures because I need to kill, you know, an Oracle of Moldiah. Okay, I'm not going to name 3 cards, but you get it. Like, there may be times early in their game where I'm like, bing, bang, boom, get rid of Vile Smasher, get rid of Timna, get rid of your Oracle.
And it's up to 3, so even if you can't find that many legal targets, you can still do it.
And then later in the game, you're like, oh, then I just Rise of the Dark Realms myself, kind of.
Yeah, and if you have creatures with ETBs, you can kill your own and rise them back up as well.
Good All right, stuff. The next one is the red one. It's Finale of Promise. Red, red, and X for a sorcery. You may cast up to 1 target instant card and or up to 1 target sorcery card from your graveyard, each with converted mana cost X or less, without paying their mana cost. So you get 1 instant and 1 sorcery out of your graveyard with CMC X or less, and you cast them. But if X is 10 or more, copy each of those spells twice. You may choose new targets for the copy. This one seems actually it might be the most powerful of all of them.
Yeah, it seems the most, just because recasting spells, I think, is more powerful than killing some creatures or drawing some cards or making some soldier token.
Yeah. I mean, at 10, like, imagine if you just have 1 extra turn spell in there, you're going to get 3 of that.
Yeah.
And then 3 of, like, I don't know, some instant, you know, even if it just happens to be, like, I don't know, Mystic Confluence or something, I'll just draw 9 cards,
right,
take 3 extra turns, like, you're going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are going to win. Finale of Devastation is the last green finale we're going to talk about. It's X green green for a sorcery. Search your library and or graveyard for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle it. And if X is 10 or more, creatures you control get plus X and gain haste until end of turn. So you don't need to obviously find a Crater Hoof with this to win, but you can find a big creature and give all your creatures haste. And plus X going to be at minimum 10. So they're going to get +10/+10. This is definitely a Timmy card. It's a little bit of Green Sun Zenith in there.
It doesn't give trample. So it
doesn't give trample. I think because Wizards knows, right? If it gave trample, it would just be an auto include in all these kinds of decks.
I mean, it could just be like another copy of Crater Hoof in those decks, too. It might be worth it.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be able to find Crater Hoof with it.
You can also just do it for value, get Terastodon and blow up stuff. Like, it could be toolboxy, right? Just get the thing I need right now.
Just need a lot of mana to really hit that 10 mark.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to do the 10 thing, though. Like, just 2 extra mana onto Seedborn Muse is pretty good.
Yeah. Right? Anytime you can fetch a creature straight into the battlefield, not to mention this actually looks for your graveyard, which I don't think many cards
do. Oh, that's actually a good point, yeah.
And your Seedborn Muse is definitely not long for this world if people see it.
Yeah, so being able to regrow it and put it on the battlefield in all in one fell swoop is pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, and before we move on, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today. Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
And we're back. We're in the midst of our War of the Sparks set review. All right, we're going to go into cards by color now.
Oh, gosh, so many cards in this set.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to start with red. The first one is Bolt Bend. It's 3 and a red for an instant. It says this spell costs 3 generic less to cast if you control a creature with power 4 or greater. So if you have a Ferocious, as we would call it, it just costs red. And it says change the target of target spell or ability with a single target.
It's a counter spell.
Or ability, too. So you can sort of change the target of a Planeswalker ability, too. Mm-hmm. Things like that. Yeah, I like this card just for one red if you've got a general with 4 power or more that's likely to be on the battlefield.
Notably also a uncommon, which we don't really see too much of. All right, next up is Dreadhorde Arcanist, 1 and a red for a 1/3 zombie wizard with trample. Whenever Dreadhorde Arcanist attacks, you may cast target instant or sorcery card with CMC less than or equal to Dreadhorde Arcanist's power from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. If that card would be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. So I would say like, oh, Feather wants to play with this, but then the card gets exiled, which isn't as great.
Isn't that the same wording as Flashback? Wouldn't it still go to your hand?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, because it doesn't go to the graveyard. You exile it as it resolves.
So you can stack that trigger.
True.
So I think it still works. Also, Feather has the cards that pump its power.
Pump itself up, yeah.
So that you can not just get 1 CMC spells. Even though Feather has a lot of 1 CMC spells, so you can also just use it for that. Yeah, I think this is really good in Feather.
It's about whether or not you can convert
Zada.
This has to attack.
Yeah.
And because it has trample and it's a 1-power creature, it's asking you, please make me stronger.
Yep. Yeah. That's why I think Feather is a super good fit for it.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to Black. As usual, Black has the most cards, I think, that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
There's a reason it's the most powerful color. First one is Command the Dreadhorde.
Command.
4 black for a sorcery. Choose any number of target creature and or planeswalker cards in graveyards. Not just yours, all graveyards. Command the Dreadhorde deals damage to you equal to the total converted mana cost of those cards. Put them onto the battlefield under your control.
That's pretty good.
I mean, you could get...
It reminds me of Boss of Citadel, but it's in your graveyard instead.
Not just yours, in graveyards.
Oh, right. Oh, my gosh.
So it's planeswalkers and creatures as much as you're willing to pay life for CMC out of anybody's graveyard.
So again, 6 mana, 5 life, Seedborn Muse.
I mean, I'm thinking 6 mana, 20 life, get a Seedborn Muse, some kind of Eldrazi, and then like something else.
Yeah, just get a bunch of stuff.
Just like boom, yeah.
Yeah, Command the Dreadhorde definitely, if you have the life to spare, can be extremely backbreaking. Sometimes also might just do nothing. So it's one of those cards where I think the upside is massive and the downside is definitely there.
But yeah, I don't think it's very likely to do nothing. And especially if you're in a life gain deck, it's very possible that it's Rise of the Dark Realms for 6 mana.
Yeah, because you can choose any number.
Because I'm like, I have 120 life. I don't care. I'll pay 50 of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that anytime you're paying life for resources has always been borderline broken. That's why channel and those type of effects are banned.
Yeah.
So that seems like a very powerful effect to me.
Very
and also indeed. Because our format is like balanced differently. 40 life is what you start with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Deliver Unto Evil is another card that we previewed for the IGN video alongside Kyle Hill. It's 2 and a black for a sorcery. Choose up to 4 target cards in your graveyard. If you control a Bolas Planeswalker, return those cards to your hand. Otherwise, an opponent chooses 2 of them, leave the chosen cards in your graveyard, and put the rest into your hand. So at the very least, as long as you have enough cards in your graveyard, it's 3 mana, draw 2. If you have a Bolas Planeswalker, you just draw 4 cards. And then when the spell is uncasting, you exile it, because otherwise you could loop this thing and be very powerful.
Yeah, and we see all the time that there are situations you can put people in where there's just no good options. They can even veto two of them and you're still getting awesome stuff.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's cards and not just creatures, I really like. It's just giving black an ability it has trouble with. I mean, they have some things like Yawgmoth's Will and some other things, but in general, they mostly only can get creatures back. So now we're seeing them be able to get planeswalkers back and just any card with this. So
yeah. Also love the art. Might be my favorite art in the set.
There is a playmat we've seen. We've got one right over there. It's sweet. All right, next card. Dreadhorde Invasion, one and a black for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose one in life and amass one. Then it says, sorry, I'll read amass again. You put a 1/1 counter on an army you control. If you don't control one, you create a 0/0 black zombie army creature token first. So this will make one token that just every turn will get bigger. It also says whenever a zombie token a zombie token you control with power 6 or greater attacks, it gains lifelink until end of turn. So that part's not really going to be relevant. This
it's
is kind of
any
like
any zombie token, so it doesn't just have to be the army, notably.
This is kind of Bitter Blossomy, and I think if you have ways to sacrifice creatures and things, like just we've learned like 2 mana for an enchantment that just creates a token every turn is very, very good. Never mind things like Divine Visitation and things like that, which would just be really crazy with it. So,
right.
Yeah. I just generally like these as a turn 2 play that's going to get you a ton of value throughout the game.
Yeah.
As like fodder for Ashnod's Altars or Chump Blockers or stuff you can, you know, put a sword of on.
And if you let this grow up to a 6/6, you'll have lost 6 life, but then
you get it all back.
Yeah.
This one's pretty interesting.
Yeah, this is interesting because of one particular line of text. Yeah. It's Kaya's ghost form, and we've seen this around, this effect around a lot, but not in this particular order because Kaya's associated this time. Enchantment aura, enchant creature or planeswalker you control. That's interesting.
Yep.
When enchanted permanent dies or is put into exile, return that card to the battlefield under your control. So this will buy you back something. Now, a lot of times, like it would just say whenever this creature dies, return to the battlefield tapped or whatever.
Yep.
Kaya's ghost form enchants creatures and planeswalkers, and it can be returned onto the battlefield even if it gets exiled.
Like, there's a couple of ways around it. Obviously, if they bounce it, the Kai's ghost form goes away.
Right.
But in general, it's a lot better than the ones that only care if it dies. Exile is another thing that's very likely to happen. Another thing here that's easy to overlook is the fact that this can go on planeswalkers. And planeswalkers are a little different than creatures, right? Because a creature, you need a sacrifice outlet to get rid of it, but often a planeswalker can, with its minus ability, can kind of get rid of itself, and then it will immediately come back, and that's considered a new permanent, so you could just activate it again. So that does seem very powerful.
I think in the Moldrotha deck, it's really good.
Oh, yeah. Really, really good. Yep. Yeah. Okay. The next one is another card that we previewed on that IGN video where we also revealed Bolas and Deliver Unto Evil. It's the Elder Spell, black for a sorcery. Destroy any number of target planeswalkers. Full stop.
Just for black.
Any number. So you just pick all the planeswalkers you want on the battlefield to not be there anymore, and they're gone. Then choose a planeswalker you control. Put 2 loyalty counters on it for each planeswalker destroyed this way.
2 each? Why couldn't it just be 1?
It's pretty nuts. So if you have a planeswalker and you destroy 3 planeswalkers with this, you get 6 loyalty counters onto your planeswalker.
It's almost instantly going to be an ulti.
Almost certainly going to ultimate it. This is very, very powerful at its top end.
Yeah.
Now, at the bottom end, you don't have a planeswalker and nobody else does either, and it does nothing. So that's what the juggling act here. And we talked about this a little bit on our planeswalker review episode, which was the previous episode, about how we believe the environment's probably going to change at least in the short term, and there'll be a lot more planeswalkers on the battlefield for a little while. And we came to the conclusion, I think you do run the Elder Spell in most of your black decks for now, at least.
Especially if you have a planeswalker of your own.
Yeah. But I think even then, even if you don't, I think for a while you can, like, because even if I just paid black, destroyed 1 planeswalker.
Yeah, that's still an acceptable rate, right? Yeah. We've seen that card happen a lot already. Or
usually
one
cost
black,
3.
Yeah. Or so, 4 to exile, yeah.
Yeah, so, and the fact that sometimes you just go bing, bang, boom, get rid of 3 or 4 and put loyalty counters on my planeswalker. Even just, I destroy 3 planeswalkers for 2 mana, it's great.
Very good, even if you don't have one.
But there are games where no planeswalkers are played.
Talk to your meta, see what's going on, ask everyone for deck lists, and then slip in the Elder Spell, depending on what their answer is.
So I wanted to have a discussion here about how much more important it will be to run targeted planeswalker removal. And they gave us some in this set, but it's mostly concentrated in black, which I'm a little disappointed by.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bummer.
Because red's good at getting rid of planeswalkers, but you have to play kind of bad spells sometimes.
Damage-based spells, right.
Yeah, and then white, green, and blue are just kind of SOL. They just have to, like...
They could bounce.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I wish they would have given them a little bit better ways to handle now that the environment's going to have a lot more planeswalkers running around.
SOL, by the way, stands for straight out of luck.
That's right.
A wholesome crowd out there.
That's right. I was just assuming that those who didn't know what it meant wouldn't know what it means. All right, so there's...
Soul Ring.
There's two... cards we want to talk about. One is Price of Betrayal. It's a black mana for a sorcery. Remove up to 5 counters from target artifact, creature, planeswalker, or opponent.
Actually, I think this card is somewhat playable in a lot of different metas. It's interesting because it's artifact, creature, planeswalker, or opponent. So you could get rid of different kinds of counters. Save someone from being infected out, for instance.
It's true. You can remove poison counters. So good in our meta, maybe. You can remove experience counters. You can remove +1/+1 counters. You can remove, like... what it was Lux Cannon get? Charge counters.
Charge counters, right.
You can remove Planeswalker loyalty counters, so...
It's pretty flexible.
Yeah. Do you think you play this card? It's tough, right? It's still situational.
If you're playing with experience counters in your meta, then yes, for sure.
But I mean, let's say like you have 5 people in your meta and each of them has 1 experience counter deck. Out of their 5 or 6 decks.
Are you going to ever use it on yourself? I don't think so.
You can't. It's only opponent.
No, target artifact, creature, planeswalker, or opponent.
So use it on yourself, meaning...
I don't know why you would.
Artifact or creature. Yeah. I guess there are probably some artifacts and creatures that you might want to remove. I mean,
I don't know. I don't think you run this then. It's just... Oh, geez.
It's just too likely that it's not usable.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not going to be very impactful. Like, removing +1/+1 counters on the creature is generally not going to kill it. It's just going to bring it back down to its base level, which is not worth a full card.
Right.
Because you might as well just run Doomblade or something.
This is the moment when Liliana does defy Nicol Bolas, so the art is very impactful. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'll play it just for that cool art. But yeah, I don't think you actually play this. I think you'd much rather just have something that says destroy target planeswalker.
All right. Okay, well, let's read the next card then and see if we want to play that.
Bark Harvest. It is a black for a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice a creature or pay 3 and a black. So it'd be 5 mana total if you didn't sacrifice a creature to destroy target creature or planeswalker. Now this I could see having more play as it's just a single target removal spell. You do need to sacrifice something or you're paying 5 mana for it, and that's not a good rate. That's a limited rate.
Would you rather just play Hero's Downfall?
Yes. For guaranteed 3 mana and not having to sacrifice a creature? Yeah. But this is a great budget option.
Also, there may be a deck where you know you're just creating a lot of like tokens, expendable creatures.
And in which case, black mana for that, it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
There was that card in Modern Masters that did the same thing. Sacrifice creature and destroy charged creature, right?
Yep. But this one hits Planeswalkers.
Planeswalkers too.
All right, moving on to white. Only got a few cards for white that we think are worth talking about.
Ignite the Beacon. This is one of the very first cards previewed for War of the Spark. It's 4 and a white for an instant to search your library for up to 2 Planeswalker cards, reveal them, put them into your hand, then shuffle your library. You're probably going to see more cards like this being played now that Planeswalkers are everywhere. And just finding 2 of them for 5 mana is not an amazing rate, but, you know, in white, you're the color that can tutor out Planeswalkers, apparently. So
it's an instant.
Yeah, it's an instant.
I think the instant part makes it quite a bit better.
Right.
Because you're able to hold up your mana and see what's happening and see if the door's open and it's safe, you know? And you're like, oh, I didn't need to use my mana for something else. Boom, get 2 Planeswalkers in my hand, specific ones. I think that could be a very powerful card and a good piece.
I think so, too.
All right, the next one is Ravnica at War.
At War.
3 and a white for a sorcery. Exile all multicolored permanents.
Now, this, I think, is a big-time house in EDH.
What do you mean by that?
It's going to house things. It's going to put them in the house, and then we're going to crush the house under it. That's
Is that what house things means?
I don't think so. I got housed by that. Like, I don't get what that means. Did someone drop a house on you?
Maybe it's like Wizard of Oz. It's the Wizard of Oz reference.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, where did that saying come from?
I don't know.
That card is a house.
Yeah, that card's a house. Well, I mean, that makes sense. We say things are an absolute unit these days, right? Or it's thick.
Yeah.
So maybe Ravnica at War, it is an absolute unit of a card. I mean, again, there's a lot of multicolored permanents in our format, so.
Yeah, and definitely helps mono white.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have mono colored stuff. And probably, like, 2 color decks might be pretty safe. But usually...
There are some multicolored decks that never play multicolored cards, gold cards, right? A lot of them are just like...
Usually commanders are multicolored, though. I mean, the vast majority. Obviously, some are monocolored, but I'd say like somewhere in the range of 80 to 85% of the commanders you're going to face are multicolored.
If this doesn't hurt you too much, then I would play this.
Because you only really have to get three cards with it, and it none of yours. Exiles. Yeah, yeah for good. It to be pretty good.
Yeah.
It's only four mana.
And multicolored permanents, so this does include enchantments, artifacts, yeah. if they're colored.
That's true. All right, the next one is single combat, three white-white for a sorcery. Each player chooses a creature, planeswalker, sorry, creature or planeswalker they control, then sacrifices the rest. Players can't cast creature or planeswalker spells until the end of your next turn.
Which sucks because it includes yourself. You yeah. don't even. It's this card isn't great because it gives your entire table a whole turn cycle to rebuild after you've cast this.
Well, they can't cast creature or planeswalkers until the end of your next
but
turn.
But it comes until the end of your next turn. Your whole turn, you right. can't do anything, and then you pass the turn, and then they get sort of like first priority to start the.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would have again. To be in a deck that doesn't have a lot of creatures and planeswalkers, so you can be like, oh, I'm going to cast artifacts and enchantments.
Artifacts, enchantments, sorceries. Yeah. yeah.
I don't like the part where they get to keep their best thing either.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of effects like this in the past for this sort of white board wipe. It is interesting that you stop creatures and planeswalker spells for a turn cycle.
Yeah.
But again, I think players will find ways around that. So this is an interesting board wipe, but I'm not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, I guess I'm not either. The can't cast spells thing could be abusable. Maybe that yeah. part of it in the right deck could work. But in general, Tragic Arrogance, at least you're picking what they keep, so they're keeping their worst thing, not their best thing.
Right. It yeah. is cool, though, that Sorin and Nahiri are just having it out still.
We should be fighting Bolas. No, screw you.
No, screw you. You put me in a rock.
You put me in a wall.
You put me in a house. Straight up. Stuck him in the house. I would be pissed, too, man.
You put me in a house.
All right, our first instant of Proliferate is here. It's Evolution Sage for 2 and a green. You get a 3-2 Elf Druid. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, Proliferate.
Landfall, Proliferate.
Yeah, that's actually really powerful in the right kinds of decks.
There's at least one land-based deck that has a Planeswalker as its commander, Lord Windgrace, mm-hmm. so this seems like a shoo-in for that. Just very, very good in general. Because
Azusa-based decks, Oracle Moldiah-based decks.
Even just like... Super Friends decks that have green, and most of them do because doubling season attracts her or whatever. Yeah. Like, even if you just play one land per turn, this is just a card that says proliferate once per turn.
Yeah. Circuitous Route.
Yeah.
There's lots of ways to get a bunch of lands.
Fetch lands.
Fetch lands, yeah.
Yeah. You could easily, with that out, maybe like play a planeswalker, crack two fetch lands, and just that's kind of like doubling season. Like,
yeah.
get four loyalty counters onto your planeswalker and ultimate that turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, maybe I do play that card that removes counters from planeswalkers.
But the problem is it's a sorcery, so if they're going to do that on their turn, you good can't point. Even, yeah. Which That's was an point. Instant. All right. This is called Storm the Citadel. It is a green card, 4 and a green. Sorcery. Until end of turn, creatures you control get +2/+2 and gain. Whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, destroy target artifact or enchantment defending player controls. So okay. I thought this was interesting and maybe usable in that creature-based decks a lot of times are able to bash in, but they can't like convert that into
to
advantage.
To something else, yeah.
Yeah, and being able to be like, boom, I actually hit you with three creatures and I'm going to destroy three of your things or one from each of right. you.
I think Trample's very important as well in this kind of deck. Otherwise, you do have Aura Shards-esque abilities, right? And that's yep. pretty powerful. But in just straight, again, mono green, we've seen a lot of mono green stompy help in this set alone, even with the God Eternal. Ronus, so maybe that's the kind of card you would play in that deck.
It also has Sweetheart.
It's also defending player, right? So it
yeah,
deals
you can't
a
like
player.
Hit you
can't
and then
hit
destroy
you.
Mel's thing.
Yeah. yeah, so it's fun.
Yeah, maybe not the best.
Now this card, I'm a big fan of Flux yeah. Channeler. It's kind of the blue version of the Evolution Sage we just talked about.
Yep.
Two and a blue for a 2/2 human wizard. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, proliferate. So in the blue-red spells deck, or just any spells like with cantrips and a lot of mana, this thing could again bring your planeswalker to ultimate ability very quickly.
I mean, you know what are non-creature spells? Planeswalkers.
Oh my
so
goodness!
So you cast a planeswalker and proliferate a different planeswalker. oh. My friend. Right. Okay.
Proliferate and walkers. doom, doom, doom.
All right, the next one is Lazotep Plating.
Big fan.
One in a blue for an instant. You amass one, so you create a 1/1 zombie army creature token, basically. And it says you and permanents you control gain hexproof until end of turn.
I like playing a lot of these kinds of cards like Heroic Intervention mm-hmm. and cards that just save your permanents. Now, not giving them indestructible, but instead hexproof is interesting, but I could still see this being useful, right? Someone tries to target your stuff in general, has Lazda playing, both gets you a little amassed army.
Also, the little twist here is it gives you hexproof as right. the player, so it can save you from targeted card disruption, discard and stuff, you know. Craig yeah. likes to like mind twist people.
for like seven sometimes. And so like I would like a Lazotep plating to protect myself from that.
Gosh.
He did that to me the other night.
Well, if someone also tries to proliferate onto you.
Yeah.
Did he do that to you the other night?
Well, I was winning. Oh, so okay. He was like, sorry, dude. And then made me discard my hand. And I'm like, okay. Then somebody wheeled a couple turns later, and then he goes, sorry, dude, and
again?
Went to mind twist the rest of my hand. Luckily, I had a counterspell the second time, but
geez.
I was like, geez. By the way, he's not sorry when he says he's sorry like that. He's not sorry at all.
It's funny because he always has this gleeful, like,
yeah. Sorry, man.
Sorry, not sorry. This is great. I'm doing it. All right, next up. This is a very powerful spell here. Narset's Reversal, blue, counter target spell. Just kidding. It's an instant, and it says, copy target instant or sorcery spell, then return it to its owner's hand. You may choose new targets for the copy. Josh, how do we break it?
There's a couple ways. One is the base level of this is basically counter somebody's spell and copy it for yourself. So expropriates a really good one, right? Kind of Venzers it back to their hand, and then you make a copy of it. The way to break it, though, is with sort of fork spells and things like that. So a fork spell with this will allow you to cast a spell, Narset's Reversal, that spell back to your hand, and that effect's still going to happen. Now, fork my Narset's Reversal.
Targeting
my Narset's Reversal so that that can target
the fork
and bring both of them back to my hand. And now I've just played three cards that all went back to my hand, similar to Feather. And then I can just keep doing that. Also, Narset's Reversal, if you can bring it back with a card, like there's a whole bunch of cards that like basically give you an instant or sorcery back out of your graveyard,
right?
So it can allow you to play the same instant or sorcery just like every turn. Because think of the cards like, and we keep saying expropriate, it's just the go-to card for like very powerful effect. Think of cards like that, though, and oftentimes the way that Wizards templates those is in a manner so that they're harder to abuse now, so they exile themselves after use,
right?
Yeah, well, this bounces it back to your hand.
Before it lets it resolve fully.
Yes, so and makes a copy of it. And so what happens is it doesn't get exiled. And so that's how you can get around this whole, we don't want you to play this again and again and again. Well, expropriate with a fork and Narset's Reversal and it's just over.
It's just over
when you cast the first one, yeah. But Karn's Temporal Sundering or some, you know, different cards like that.
The fact that you can do it to someone else's big time spell if they try the Mass Manipulation or Blatant Thievery, right? Those are also cards that you can steal. And so there are a lot of cards in that world that, you know, just taking it for two mana is pretty good. It does bounce it back to their hand, but the chance of them being able to recast like a 9-mana spell, probably not that high.
And you get that effect before they do. So now they're like maybe dead by the time it gets back and they can cast it again. Like,
right.
Yeah, that can be insane. All right. The next card is Spark Double. 3 and a blue. Creature Illusion, 0/0. You may have Spark Double enter the battlefield as a copy of a creature or planeswalker you control, except it enters with a 1/1 counter on it if it's a creature. It enters with an additional loyalty counter on it if it's a planeswalker, and it isn't legendary if that permanent is legendary.
So you get to have two planeswalkers of the same or two legendary creatures of the same. This is one of the best clones ever made.
Yeah, for sure.
Jacob.
It's the same cost as a regular
clone. Yeah, which is 4 mana.
And it makes a better copy because it's +1 counter or additional loyalty.
And it does the Helm of the Host thing.
Yes,
makes it
so you can have two of it. Like, you can have two Vile Smashers, which is those. There's certain ones, like 2 Thrasios is not that much better than one because it doesn't. But 2 Vile Smashers is way better because I cast a 7 CMC spell and I do 14 damage to my opponents. Yeah,
yeah, that kind Sakishima's of stuff. Really good, but it doesn't copy Planeswalkers.
Yeah.
So that's actually really interesting. It is, of course, a creature you control, so there's a little more limited there. But I think this is definitely a pushed card.
I could see the Teferi decks like that running it and that kind of stuff because it's just like...
More Teferis, untapping 4 lands, drawing 2 cards.
Untapping 8 things, it's insanity. Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of things this does that I think a lot of people are going to want to... If you want two of your commander...
It's definitely just straight up one of the best clones ever made, though. Nothing beats Stacks Duplicate, though, guys, just saying. Actually, that goes better.
Yeah.
I don't know, that was crazy. All right, now we're on to our gold-colored cards, multicolored, and then we're going to do artifacts, lands, and then talk about the set. So first up, we have Casualties of War. 2 black, green, green. It's a sorcery, and it says, choose one or more. Destroy target artifact, destroy target creature, destroy target enchantment, destroy target land, destroy target planeswalker. So that's 5 total effects you could have, or you could just do one of them, which is great. Decimate is one of those cards that looks awesome, but you have to
every once in a while you don't have enough targets, or one of yours has to be one of the targets.
Yeah, or it all has to go at one person because they have all the targets.
Like, sorry.
So Casualties of War, it is a little overcosted though. It's 6 mana, but if you could do all 5 of the things, it's extremely powerful.
Six mana, destroy five different permanent types is strong, yeah, for sure.
Six mana doing three is probably acceptable, too.
Yeah. I mean,
even two.
Windgrace's Judgment exists, which is a five CMC and an instant, and mm-hmm. you get one permanent from each player.
Right.
So you can't destroy two of the same, but I think that's probably a little better than this, but this is still good and probably going to be cheaper than Windgrace's Judgment.
Yeah, and I think you'll find a lot of times playing this, you'll be like, sweet, this is going to do a lot of work.
All right, the next one is Death Sprout. One black, black, green, so four mana for an instant. Destroy target creature. Search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. So this is Rampant Growth plus Murder.
Yeah, so Murder is one black, black, or it could be cast down for one in a black, yep. and then black and a green is Rampant Growth.
I like this card a lot because I want a Rampant Growth. I also want to destroy creatures. This mm-hmm. is doing both of those things, mm-hmm. and it's an instant to boot.
Yeah, and typically if you have mana dorks, they're coming on turn one or two, which means you're casting Death Sprout by three.
Black and green are already the strongest color combination, and they just keep printing these Assassin's Trophy,
right.
Windgrace's Judgment, Death Sprout type of cards. I'm like, can we give Boros some of those things somehow? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And black and white doesn't need more things that do this, but I guess, hey, why not? Let's give them another one.
And this one's only two mana.
And this one's nuts. I think this is actually probably the fatal push of the set for Commander. D-Spark, it's black and a white for an instant. Exile target permanent with CMC 4 or greater. That's a lot of stuff in EDH.
I mean, this probably, right now, we've got Anguish Unmaking, Utter End.
Yep.
This probably pushes Utter End out, right?
I don't know if it does. I think you still just want to play all of them because Utter End does get anything. This is target
true.
Permanent.
You just add it
unless
and put
you
it
have
in.
A, yeah, there's no lands that is going to really affect, right?
No.
That CMC 4
but
or greater.
Utter Ends and Anguish and Making already can't hit lands.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you. Like, you're not losing that. So, you're losing basically 1, 2, and 3 CMC stuff.
I guess you just have to look at your meta and see how often you're getting rid of a 1 CMC or 2, 3 or CMC spells.
You just don't want to pay 3 and 4 mana to do that anyway. So, yeah. Like, this is 2 mana, but I mean, Exile. Instant, it's going to get rid of most of the problematic things.
And is uncommon. That's really good.
Yeah. I think this is like, I think if I could only run two of the three, I'm running Anguish and Making and this and Utter Ends on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. But you might be right. I might run all four or all three, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
D-Spark though, jeez.
I really like the card a lot.
Black and white, just always getting these effects and it almost seems a little unbalanced because every time I play against a deck with black and white, I just know them. None of my permanents.
They can answer whatever you do.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so Boros is going to get a little help here. We've got Heartwarming Redemption. It's two
That's
red.
That's what Wizards is saying about Boros. This
Please,
is a Heartwarming
guys,
Redemption.
We're redeeming
Please.
Ourselves. We gave you Feather. We gave you this.
Now we got this.
It's two red and white. For an instant, discard all the cards in your hand, then draw that many cards plus one, and you gain life equal to the number of cards in your hand. So
this replaces itself because you're casting it. So if you have six cards, this goes down to five, and then you draw six.
Yeah, so you draw the equal amount of cards, you gain the life, and it's an instant, so you don't. Your window of exposure is small.
And it's four mana.
Yeah, so this is the type of effect I think does help because when you get too many lands in your hand or just a bad hand, you can kind of get yourself out of that situation where right yeah. now Boros is just like, if you're stuck with a bad hand,
you're
stuck. Just
stuck
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're Boros, you play this card.
Yeah, I think so.
You don't have many other options, so it's kind of nice because it makes deck building less, at least a little easier. All right, Merfolk Skydiver, 1-1 for a green-blue for a 1-1 with flying. When Merfolk Skydiver enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control, and it has the activated ability to proliferate for three, a green, and a blue. So just even the 2-mana 1-1 card that comes down adds a 1-1 counter. If you have +1/+1 counter synergies is nice. Being able to proliferate on a stick too. Never
yeah, and it doesn't tap it. So if you create infinite mana, you're going to be able to ultimate
right.
any planeswalker that you can get out. Basically.
Oh, that's a good point. That's
yeah.
a good point.
Okay, this next one's, I think, sneaky good. Mayhem Devil, one a black and a red for a 3/3 devil. Whenever a player sacrifices a permanent, Mayhem Devil deals one damage to any target.
Mm.
So if you can get into these infinite sacrifice loops, you'll just win.
Yeah.
Because you can just have Mayhem Devil hit players. But also like just treasures and, you know, normal sacrifices, grave pact, Dictate of Erebos type stuff. You're just going to be like, oh, I sacrifice creatures, so do you three. I get four damage out of that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a Rampaging Ferocidon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Damage.
I think that card is quite good. And you can point it at creatures, so you can work with people. Like, hold on,
don't crack your fetch land until my turn. I'll crack it. We'll deal two damage to that Oracle of Moldiah or right. that Lavinia or whatever you've got, that Gaddock Teague.
Dude, look at what he's riding on. He's like riding.
It's like a unicycle with spikes. That looks dangerous.
Yeah.
But Mayhem Devil, you know, he likes to live dangerously.
It's true. And the flavor text is, even when things are destroying the city, Rakdos is like, we don't care. We're here to party. All right, next up is Role Reversal. I really like this card. Blue, and a red for a sorcery. Exchange control of two target permanents that share a permanent type. So I love swapping things. I think it's a really fun way to get around, like, you know, you can give them something really crappy for something amazing. Maybe all your new planeswalkers at one loyalty can't use it anymore. You switch it out with something else. Just a fun card in general.
I think these are really good for lands because you always have a crappy land.
Yeah.
You always have like a regular and basic land or something like that. And there's often a good land.
Get an ancient
tomb. Out there. Get an ancient tomb. Get a Maze of Ith. Get a Gaia's Cradle. Also, denies them that thing because they don't have it anymore. So, yeah, I really like that card, just literally only to take lands.
Yeah.
Also, it can take everything else too. So, seems good. Also, you've got a treasure token. They've got a Painted Harmonicon. Well, I'll trade you. All right. The next one is
Zedru too.
Oh, yeah. It's really good in Zedru, obviously. You're going to give them stuff they really don't want and get something awesome, yeah. Time Wipe is two white, and a blue for a sorcery. Return a creature you control to its owner's hand, then destroy all creatures.
I like this card
a lot,
too.
So save your best thing and you know, blow up everybody else's board. Murph came up with some good ones for this. There are creatures that, when you play them, they get sorceries back from your graveyard, like Archaeomancer and Monoqual. So you could board wipe every turn.
Salvager of Secrets.
Yeah, just do that. Get the time wipe. Play it again. Maybe if you had a bunch of planeswalkers out, start doing that and nobody can get to them.
Pretty oppressive in that case, yeah.
So that's the type of thing you can do with this.
All right, now we are on to our artifactos before hitting up our lands at the end here. We're going to start off with God Pharaoh's Statue. It's 6 mana for a legendary artifact. I believe this is where Fibblethip is on the new Totally Lost card.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He's like crawling on it.
Yeah. I wonder if you can even see him on the art. Maybe not. Spells your opponent cast cost 2 more to cast. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent loses 1 life. So it's an expensive stacksy spell.
Still pretty good.
Yeah.
Making all their spells cost 2 more.
Yeah. Each spell, right? Not non-creature. Just
I think it's well
spells.
Worth the 6 mana you put into it, because if each player casts 1 spell, you broke
mana
even.
By the time.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's going to just turn off a lot of things, right? Like, you play this on, even if you play it on turn 6, they can't play their 6 drops.
That's true. If you're definitely trying to play that repressive stacksy deck and you rush this thing out, it's great. Because it's, again, only affecting your opponents.
Yep.
So, and it incidentally just drains them of a little bit of life slowly.
Yeah, that part I don't think matters as much, but it you know, it's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the next artifact and the last artifact is Firemind Vessel. 4 mana for an artifact. It enters the battlefield tapped, which is a downside. But you tap it and add 2 mana of different colors. So it's like Gilded Dynamo.
Gilded Dynamo.
Gilded Power Stone, maybe.
But 2 different colors is great. Yeah. Gilded Lotus only adds 1 color. And again, if you're like looking to build a 5 color deck and don't have access to all the lands, you're going to need to run cards like this.
Yeah, I think this is a decent budget option. It's not great, obviously, in the highly tuned deck because it does come in tapped. But, you know, a lot of people are coming to Magic all the time, don't have all Gilded Lotuses and stuff. This is a fine replacement.
Super fine. All right, lands time.
We have a lot of lands in this set.
Yeah, and they're all pretty interesting. First up is Blast Zone. It's a land that enters the battlefield with a charge counter on it, not tapped, notably. You can tap it to add a colorless mana. You can also pay X and X to tap it to put X charge counters on Blast Zone. Remember, it comes in with 1. And you can pay 3 and tap it to sacrifice Blast Zone, destroy each non-land permanent with converted mana cost equal to the number of charge counters on Blast Zone. So this is like a modern card, but in a land instead. And
yeah, it's like Ratchet Bomb a little.
Yeah, Ratchet.
It's like those kind of effects. Hey, you get a board wipe kind of on a land, or at least targeted removal
targeted,
on a land.
Yeah, even targeted like all 5 CMC spells, basically. I mean, you can always add stuff to this on your and someone else's end step. You can wait. I think this is really interesting. I like the fact that this is on a land.
Yeah.
You never really see this kind of widespread effect on the land, which is pretty neat.
It creates a lot of versatility in deck buildings, you know, where like green decks have trouble with that kind of effect.
Yeah, totally.
Just when they're mono green, so
even,
they can do
even
it.
Mono red, right? And now you can finally get rid of some enchantments.
Specific things, yeah. It's like, oh, that's 4 CMC, then I'll just get there and get that. Yeah. The next one, a lot of people when it was spoiled were tweeting at me about
it's
it.
All you.
It's Emergent Zone. It's a land. Taps for colorless or diamond mana, but you can pay 1 and tap and sacrifice Emergent Zone And you may cast spells this turn as though they had flash. So it gives you Vidalcan Orrery for the turn.
Yeah, and we play cards like Winding Canyons, Alchemist Refuge. Yep. This can go in any color deck, so expect that card to probably rise in price over time. I think that's it's a definite sleeper slash just good card for EDH.
Yeah, sacrificing is a cost, but generally you can set up a situation where like I'm gonna do that the end step before my turn, get a ton of value, untap, win on my turn.
Yeah, and if you can replay the card, then even better, obviously. Yep. All right, Interplanar Beacon. This is a Planeswalker land. It's a land that says whenever you cast a Planeswalker spell, you gain one life. You can tap it to add colorless mana, or you can pay one and tap it to add two mana of different colors. Spend this mana only to cast Planeswalker spells. So Planeswalker fixing five color Planeswalker decks. I think it's just one of those lands you want to auto include.
How many Planeswalkers do you think you need in a deck before you can run that card?
Six or seven, maybe.
I guess if your commander's a Planeswalker, no, you can't do that. It's Brawl.
Yeah. Well, some plane, like,
yeah,
but they're all one color.
No, Aminatu.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right,
the
right,
new
right.
ones.
The new ones, yeah, the Bant one too.
I think if it's Aminatu, how many Planeswalkers, is it enough that just your commander is? Or
I mean,
do you, you also need like five or six in the
you
deck?
You want to gain the life off it too. I think you really need a bunch to really make that useful. It's basically super
so you
friends.
Need 15-ish.
Yeah, because it's only going to work for Planeswalker spells.
Okay. We'll ask a similar question after this card. It's Karn's Bastion. It's a land. Tap it for diamond or colorless mana, but you can also pay four and tap it and proliferate.
Oh.
So proliferate on the land. Very interesting. And
yeah, colorless, no
very
less.
Very powerful. You can obviously plus one counter decks.
Experience counters.
Would you put this in an experience counter deck?
Yeah. Sometimes it's really hard to get experience counters after a certain point with certain commanders,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And if you just have the extra mana lying around, like in the Mizzet deck, you could totally play this because you're just going to, it's two color and there's a lot of time you're never using your mana during your turn. So end of turn, proliferate.
True.
Make everything cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
How many Planeswalkers do you need to run that?
I don't know. A
same
lot
amount?
Still.
15?
Yeah. I don't even know. Maybe a little less, if it depending on what other things in your deck or your meta proliferate can really affect.
It could be really good with creature plus one counters too.
Yeah,
because sometimes just it can just add 12 power to the board or whatever,
and just infect. Right, Craig has to play this in every single one of his infect decks.
Oh, Craig,
he has to. He just has to.
No.
There's nothing he can do about it. He's got to do it.
All right, so that's all the cards we're going to talk about for this set. We had to cut it down by a little bit. So if there's anything out there you think should have been mentioned,
let us know.
Yeah, let us know. We like to do sort of wrap up, like best of. Mm-hmm. So the first question we're going to ask is, what is the best new legendary creature in the set?
The countdown?
Okay.
I think we both have to come to agreement on
this
one.
I think so. 3, 2, 1, Feather.
Yeah. We've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I think Feather is awesome. Very exciting. I think Niv-Mizzet's probably the runner-up.
Yeah. Niv-Mizzet, yeah, I can't really think of many other. I mean, unless Mowu, just because he's so cute as a little doggy. Yeah, Neheb is definitely up there too. It definitely helps Red out. I think that's the reason that we like Feather so much, is just it gives Boros just a fighting chance in a lot of ways.
It's always fun when a card comes out and it does something and it allows you to play a bunch of cards that were never really usable before that, right?
Right.
Like a whole class of cards, combat tricks, are just not being used. And that Feather says, go use all the combat tricks.
Use all of them.
Do we think is the best overall card in the set?
I think best overall Karn? It's Karn.
Karn.
It's definitely Karn.
No, it's Ugin.
Is it? Okay.
Wrong.
Yeah, I think we have to come to agreement on this one, too. It's just so good.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Bolas's Citadel. Yeah, that card.
It's the only one that really screams, like, play me in Commander.
It screams broken them, right? To me. I think it's a little too good, but
it just cheats mana cost, and it has all...
It's card draw and cheating of mana cost on the same
thing. And occasionally life drain. So it's just got, not life drain, but life loss from your opponents by making them lose life. Best art in the set, I think, for me, has to go to Deliver Unto Evil.
I like Deliver Unto Evil. Who's is it?
Seb McKinnon.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That or Death Sprout is also pretty intense.
I like Deliver Unto Evil.
Which is also,
it looks
way,
like an old like Renaissance
Seb
painting
McKinnon.
Or something.
Oh, so Seb McKinnon is just the best art in the set. And there's a lot of good art. I love what Jesper did for Fibblethip too.
Yeah, Fibblethip is sweet. That's such a Jesper looking art too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the colors and everything. I love it.
Yeah. Very cool. Okay, so if you want to pick up any of these cards, especially Bolas's Citadel is probably one you're gonna want to get.
Mm-hmm.
Feather. Or all the cards that go into those decks too. Just go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. And when you use that affiliate link, you're going to order those cards anyway to build your decks. You just may as well simultaneously help the Command Zone, Game Nights, and all of our content keep flowing. We really do appreciate everybody that does that.
Yep. And while you're there, Ultra Pro is really going all out. They are stocking the house and they're dropping the house in terms of products for War of the Spark.
And they are a house.
They are a house. Well, Card Kingdom is technically the real house. It's a kingdom.
Yeah.
But it's just called Card
My
House.
My kingdom for a house.
So make sure you guys pick up some Ultra Pro product the next time you guys are shopping at cardkingdom.com/commandzone or at your local game store. Again, I'm a playmat collector, so I was so happy to go to PAX East and get these guys. Very exciting in general. Just like cool new art. It represents me in a lot of ways. I like it. I like it a lot.
Okay. We already did an end step in the last episode, and we're doing two episodes for this, so we're going to skip the end step.
I got a good end step, though.
Because you do have one. We'll save it for the next one.
No. It's really good.
Okay.
Twitter. You can find us on Twitter.
Okay. At CommandCast, at JF Wong, at Josh Lee Kwai. You can also find our esteemed associates from our sister podcast, Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. They're on Twitter at the MMCast. And you can also find their podcast on Stitcher, on iTunes, on YouTube. If you just type in Masters of Modern, they're going to have all of the latest and greatest about how all of these cards are going to shape and alter and evolve the modern format. They're also going to be talking about Modern Horizons since it's on the horizon. Yeah. So definitely go check those guys out.
And they're on Twitter at the MMCast as well. Our editors for the show are Ashlyn Rose, Josh Murphy, and Jared Lafreniere, a friend to all of us.
Thanks, everybody. We've got a lot of people working on these episodes because we're putting out extra ones, and they're long.
They are very long, and there's a lot of graphics and a lot of cards to talk about. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer.
Stay calm.
Get palmed. He makes stuff behind us. Yeah. It's kind of like a deflecting palm.
Okay, there you go.
Jeffrey... Yeah. Deflecting Palmer. He makes the living card animations behind us
way off the rails
on the screen. Man, we're like 4 hours deep in podcasting today. And you can also find his art at the beginning and outro of our videos at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. We are ready for this podcast to end, so make sure you follow Jeffrey at Twitter, at LivingCardsMTG on Twitter.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
And we'll see you at the War of the Spark.
Peace.
Bye.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.